This edition of Nation Talk is being brought to you by the Canadian Boreal Initiative, advancing conservation to create sustainable solutions for our boreal forest.
As a result of the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on the energy economy of Western Canada, on May 1st, the federal government announced the allocation of over $1.7 billion to orphan oil and gas well cleanup in British Columbia, Alberta, and Saskatchewan. The funds were to be administered by the provinces through individual site rehabilitation programs and would provide grants to oil field service contractors to perform well, pipeline, and oil and gas site closure and reclamation work in order to get their specialized labor force back to work. Despite the fact that these programs are completely reliant on federal funds, there was and continues to be no set-aside funding for Indigenous-owned companies as recommended by the Government of Canada's own procurement strategy for Aboriginal business. This strategy was developed to ensure that a minimum of 5% of all federal procurement contracts be set aside for Indigenous businesses to build capacity within those businesses and create strategic partnerships between these business owners, industry sectors, and the Government of Canada. Indigenous business leaders like former President and CEO of the Canadian Council of Aboriginal Business, J.P. Gladue, have repeatedly called for this funding to include a minimum 5% set aside for Indigenous business. Stephen Buffalo of the Indian Resource Council proposes that the Western provinces go a step further and set aside 10% of all procurement. Last week, Shared Value Solutions, an environmental consulting firm specialized in work with Indigenous communities, published a guide for Indigenous decision makers on best practices for orphan oil and gas well rehabilitation on reserve lands and traditional territories. The guide provides comprehensive information on monitoring orphan well sites, working with owners of abandoned infrastructure and regulators, nominating sites for rehabilitation and remediation, and creating a space for Indigenous-owned companies and people to work on these projects. This guide can be downloaded for free on Shared Value Solutions' website. And joining me today to speak about the guide and the need for Indigenous business involvement in well site rehabilitation programs are J.P. Gladue, former head of the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business and founder of Moquette Consulting, as well as Stephen Rowe, senior advisor and consultant with Shared Value Solutions. Gentlemen, thank you for joining Nation Talk.
Thanks a lot, Don. Good to be here.
Thanks, Don. Great to have you on your show today.
No trouble. J.P., since leaving the Canadian Council for Aboriginal Business, what kind of work are you doing to promote business development opportunities for Indigenous people?
Thanks, Don. Well, it's been a busy few months. I've been taking a number of different contracts, from working with forestry companies to oil and gas companies and rail corridor aspirational companies to basically help infuse energy into the Indigenous economy by making sure that Indigenous businesses and people are incorporated into jobs, into the businesses. And more importantly, I think the big shift in our country has been around the equity positions and ownership of infrastructure. So I've been doing a number of jobs around bringing Indigenous communities around environmental, sustainable, responsible development and conservation. So it's an interesting space to be in these days, finding that common ground and developing our country in a responsible way with the full inclusivity of Indigenous people and communities. And I'm here at the River Cree Enoch Reserve here, and I just finished a day of board meetings with the Mikisew Group of Companies, which happened yesterday, a very progressive company and community that's doing some really great work out here in Alberta.
JP, can you speak a little bit on your role on this guide for Indigenous decision makers on best practices for orphan oil and gas well rehabilitation on reserve lands and traditional territories, please?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll hit it from a very high level, but I'll say this, you know, my time at CCAB and getting to know the folks and the great team at Shared Value Solutions led me to some post-conversations with the team to talk about what we can be doing better with regards to the oil well cleanup, et cetera. And the focus point, which I keep bringing back to the table, I've talked to all sorts of organizations and made points to government. And in your introductions, Don, I've been like a dog with a bone on this one with regards to the inclusivity and making sure that we are positioning communities and Indigenous businesses in a place where they can take advantage of the cleanup opportunities in their traditional territories. I think it's sometimes a challenge of government. They operate in their silos and they forget to take a look at their own policies. Kudos to the Liberal government for, you know, the 5% target, which is one of our proudest moments at CCAB and committing to that 5%. But really, it's a missed opportunity. And, you know, it's just a real opportunity, I think, when we bring in Indigenous businesses and communities to the table with all sorts of corporations and governments, including the provincial government here in Alberta, to grow relationships through the business lens. And that's what it's all about. And having Indigenous communities, you know, cleaning up the wells. I mean, what an opportunity to bring that Indigenous presence to look after our Mother Earth, which is a big part of who we are. I just look at this as a real missed opportunity, but it's not too late to rectify it.
JP, for me, it's like adding insult to injury for these wells on our traditional lands. Tell me, why is it important to ensure Indigenous-owned businesses have an opportunity to compete? You got into it a little bit, to compete for these grants, to perform this well pipeline, well gas, site closure, reclamation work.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's like rubbing salt in a wound. And that wound has been the, you know, us being on the peripheral of resource development for a very long time. It's been the last 15 years or so that we've started to proliferate in natural resource development and mining, oil, gas, and forestry. And so that insult to injury that you talk about is that we didn't have the opportunity for a very long time to participate, to actually develop our traditional territories and these wells. And now we're being excluded again from the opportunity to clean them, which are in our backyards. So it's a double whammy as far as I'm concerned, and it really is a missed opportunity and incredibly frustrating when we think about reconciliation and what that means in Action Number 92 and how this just really flies in the face of that. The federal government, when they transitioned that $1 billion over to the provinces to do this work in Saskatchewan, Alberta, and BC, and they simply just didn't put on a prerequisition to make sure that a portion of that work is allocated to Indigenous businesses and communities. I hope it's an oversight and they really have an opportunity here to rectify it. You know, I want to say kudos to Stephen Buffalo at the IRC and the work that he's been doing and calling for a 10%. I agree. I mean, there are so many Indigenous organizations in this province that have the capacity, want to do the work, and need to generate income for their communities as well. So it's not too late, but come on, we got to get on it.
Yeah, there's no time like the present for change. JP, what do you say to the naysayers out there that say there isn't Indigenous capacity in Alberta to do this work?
I kind of giggle at that because, I mean, I just got out of board meetings with Mikisew Group of Companies, and we've got numerous companies that are doing wholly owned and joint ventures that are doing massive amounts of work, and that's one community development corporation. There's Primco Dene, there's the Fort Mackay, there's Acton, there's amazing companies like Boucher Group, Dave and Nicole's work. You know, people that say that are just simply ignorant. They haven't taken the time to step outside of their offices and take a look around, to build relationships, to actually read some incredible business. And that's why your work, Don, is so important, because Canadians need to start waking up. And I don't think media has been doing a good enough job as a whole to showcase the capacity and the drive and the desire of our Indigenous communities and how far we've come in advancing our economies through our businesses. There's thousands of us that are doing incredible business in this country. So to the naysayers, it's an opportunity for you to wake up and actually pick up a phone or build some relationships, because once you start to do that, you'll begin to understand that this country is rich with Indigenous entrepreneurs, and it will enrich your life if you start to engage.
Well said, JP. So, Stephen, who is Shared Value Solutions, and why did it develop this guide for Indigenous business decision makers on best practices for orphan oil and gas well rehabilitation? It's a mouthful. On reserve lands and traditional territories. Why did you create this guide, Stephen?
Well, thanks, Don. Shared Value Solutions is an environmental consulting firm based out of Guelph, Ontario, where we do have offices in Alberta, New Brunswick, and D.C. I'm based out of Calgary, and our team works exclusively with clients right across Canada with the vision of ensuring that Indigenous values and perspectives are at the heart of resource development decisions. And, you know, really early during the stages of COVID-19 pandemic, we recognized that government intervention was going to be needed to keep Canada's natural resource sector viable as demand for our products around the world collapsed. So to this end, we lobbied federal and provincial governments and provided a platform for prominent voices like JPs to call on decision makers to ensure that commitments to reconciliation with Indigenous people were not watered down. And when calls for environmental flexibility were being made by industry, so we wanted to make sure that we were playing a role to provide opportunities for Indigenous businesses to take advantage of some of these opportunities that we saw coming down the road. And then, of course, with the oil well reclamation program, you know, we were quite alarmed when we saw that the $1.7 billion of federal funds allocated to the site rehabilitation did not include set-asides for Indigenous-owned firms. And this is despite the government's own target to have at least 5% of all federal contracts awarded to businesses managed and led by Indigenous people. You know, while we recognize that the government of Alberta has belatedly seen that their errors in this and announced the inclusion of two Indigenous-owned companies in the approval of the initial phase of the rehabilitation program, you know, many Indigenous companies are really struggling still to navigate the complex grant application process and develop partnerships with non-Indigenous prime contractors.
What are some of the challenges and risks Indigenous communities are facing with these orphaned and abandoned wells? Why is cleanup of these wells so important to our communities?
In a lot of ways, these wells present a real and present danger to both the environmental and human health. We know that there's tens of thousands of these wells that dot the landscape in Alberta primarily, but also northern British Columbia, throughout Saskatchewan, and even in some of the other provinces. We hear it a lot from landowners that it's unacceptable that these wells get left orphaned on their territories, but you very rarely hear it in the media about, you know, the impacts of these wells on traditional lands and reserve lands, where a lot of oil and gas development is happening. And, you know, there's methane leaks that can happen from these wells. They can leach into groundwater systems. And in a lot of regards, they present obstacles for nations to really advance their own economic development and the development of their reserve lands. So it's imperative that Indigenous governments are given an opportunity to nominate these wells and get Indigenous crews working on them so that they can be rehabilitated in a way that meets the expectations.
Well, it's toxins on our traditional lands. I think that's really what it comes down to. Beyond of advice on creating opportunities for Indigenous businesses' involvement in well site rehabilitation programs and associated nomination processes, what other best practices does that guide provide?
Well, you know, we did a lot of research into what exists out there in the realm of this field. We looked into, as you mentioned, getting businesses to work, the whole nomination process and what resources exist for nations to nominate these well sites, because, of course, that process is very convoluted and difficult and oftentimes requires permission from the owners of well sites that are no longer there. These owners have sold out and those are now no longer operated by anybody. The guide also provides some really good information on best practices associated with the monitoring and best practices for remediation. And we really kind of try and lay out a framework for a common understanding between nations and the companies that are going to be working on those well sites. You know, everybody's coming to the table with the same understanding, leveling that play field so that expectations can be communicated and opportunities can be fleshed out. It's not just the oil field crews that can get the jobs on these things. There's also opportunities for building capacity as it relates to collecting soil science and having out on the ground, learning about the technical aspects of collecting environmental data. And this can be really important for spurring interest in those types of fields and creating opportunities for capacity building that may not have existed otherwise.
Where could we find this guide? Our Indigenous leaders listening to this interview?
So the guide is available for free download on our website. So if you go to sharedvaluesolutions.com, it's under our section listed as ebooks. And I just want to make sure that I mention this as I have JP on the line, but also to recognize the hard work of Mikisew Advisian Environmental. We had some conversations with them early on in this process, and they agreed to provide some of their expertise into this, which was really, really important because, you know, We're an environmental firm. You know, we do a lot of work on the regulatory side, but we don't have necessarily boots on the ground to be able to do this well cleanup. You know, we're looking for partners out there, and Mikisew stepped up and provided some absolutely phenomenal advice to us about the types of practices that folks can understand when these operations are happening on their territory. So the book is available through our website, but I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that the Mikisew group of companies also played a big role in getting this out there.
They are a great group.
Absolutely. We know them well. JP, the last question's for you. As a national Indigenous leader, what has to be done? Who has to be at the forefront of this change for this procurement strategy? You said it's not too late. What has to be done?
Thanks, Don. Well, it takes political will. And the province of Alberta, they are a very progressive province. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the Indigenous Opportunities Corporation. And a big shout out to Alicia Dubois, as a dear friend of mine, the co-chair of CCAB, is just appointed as their new CEO who steps in September. It's a whole Indigenous board. So lean on those leaders to help guide the province in more progressive policies going forward. And to any province or any government, one-offs aren't going to do it. It's consistent behavior and policy change and educating your government at all levels to make sure they understand where the opportunities and the positive impacts can be had through policy change. So looking at the next tranches coming through for the well cleanups, plea, you know, and life is never that simple, I realize that. But at a high level, do the set-aside. You know, listen to a Stephen Buffalo, 10%. Where can we carve out 10% to ensure that the Indigenous communities and businesses have the opportunities to bid and win these projects?
I've been speaking with JP Gladue, founder of Mokwete Consulting, and Stephen Rowe, consultant and senior advisor with Shared Value Solutions. Thanks for joining Nation Talk.
Great to talk to you both.
Thanks, Don. Thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
This edition of Nation Talk has been brought to you by the Canadian Boreal Initiative, advancing conservation to create sustainable solutions for our boreal forest.